Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
People in China spent the last 3 years in strict lockdowns because of the COVID pandemic. And this year, like many countries, China began opening up. And scholars have begun returning after being barred from entering the last few years. So let's get the point of view of one scholar who's just back from China. Naysan Mahbubi joins us. He's a research scholar at the Center for the Study of Contemporary China at the University of Pennsylvania. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Scott. Delighted to be here.
So you're just back this month after 3 weeks in China. You know, as a scholar, I understand you would visit routinely. You haven't been back since 2019, like a lot of people have not been able to travel. Before asking you about, you know, your professional contacts, I just want to ask, you know, what was new? China still, I'm sure, moves fast. Last time I was there in 2019, I noticed all the cabs in southern China were electric vehicles. I noticed a lot more surveillance cameras, and I noticed it was pretty hard to use cash. I wonder what you saw.
This was my first trip since the beginning of the pandemic. So, you know, almost 4 years, a lot can change.
Yeah.
Certainly the question about cash is one that is very relevant to many foreigners going back because they've really switched over to mobile payments. And so cash is not really a thing. And until you can figure out how to get around, it can be very tricky. But the main thing I want to say is that in terms of the daily life there, Beijing, where I was visiting, was very pleasant. It was nice to see the sky is blue, you know, in a way that many of us who visited before didn't realize
was possible. Blue skies over Beijing. Like Beijing. That was unusual for me.
Absolutely. There's a river, the Liangma River, in the sort of eastern central business district, which always was really dirty. And now, you know, it's clean and it's, you know, it's not just clean. People are swimming in it. They're boating in it. So there are some aspects like that that are very palpably more pleasant than maybe the Beijing that some of us remembered from a few years ago.
Anecdotally, it just seems there are fewer international people in China, whether it's journalists who can't go in or, you know, business persons who have left and decided to not come back. Did you sense that?
Absolutely. And it came up in a lot of different conversations that I had with Chinese interlocutors who are concerned about that, who have noticed that a lot of foreigners have left in the last few years, in part because of the strictures of the COVID-19 response, but have also left because of the more difficult and sensitive political environment, which has included particular targeting of foreign consulting companies and other types of foreign actors. So it did feel like there were far fewer foreigners around generally than the last time that I was there.
As far as the tightening political space, are there things that you could sense people were reluctant to talk about, whether, you know, the government's COVID lockdowns or the acquisition of political power by Xi Jinping?
I was very clear about the tightening political space. It was a very palpably evident thing in the entirety of my visit. It didn't manifest in my friends' reluctance to talk to me. All of my conversations were extremely open and frank and robust, but people are concerned about it. They're concerned about what are the red lines that they shouldn't cross. They're concerned about what kind of a future China's going to have given this new environment under Xi Jinping.
What did the red lines seem to be?
That's a great question. And there's a lot of people who would like to know. And part of the problem is that it's not always clear. There's lots of new things that have come into that category of a red line, including words like constitutionalism and, you know, Western democracy. There is a recognition that maybe they have to be careful not to cross these lines that are shifting and may be the kind of thing you only know once you cross it. You know it when you see it.
You know, I have a cousin who was born and raised in Shanghai, and he always tells me, you know, you Americans talk about what is closed about China or, you know, what is people are not allowed to do. You're ignoring all of the things that we can do, how there is so much more openness in, say, music and culture and innovation. Did you see that?
I mean, I think because there are so few foreign journalists and scholars, but especially journalists in China right now, because many of them got kicked out,
yeah,
a lot of the stories we're getting out of China tend to focus on sort of the high politics and the restrictions. And all of those are true stories. But if we had more foreign scholars and more foreign journalists in particular, I think you would get a deeper sense of all the complexity of life in China, which does include, as you said, a lot of openness in a lot of respects as well. So one of the themes that I really pressed on a lot of my Chinese interlocutors is that we really should have not only foreign scholars return, but foreign journalists, so that the stories that come out of China can better capture the full range of things that are going on there and not just focus on the troubling things that are real but are not the only part of the story.
Well, surely part of the story in China is the economy. It has been slowing structurally. It's not going to grow as quickly as it did before. Youth unemployment, something like 20%. And there are a lot of stories online about young people losing hope. They feel, in a big city, I can never afford an apartment. Did you feel any of that?
For sure, the economy is not doing well. And anecdotally, perceptions of the economy not doing well are quite strong. A lot of my friends and colleagues would talk about how both in their own personal lives and in their institutions and their sense of their friends and families, that there is this economic tightening. I think when people like you and me, who have spent a lot of time in China in the past, think about how our Chinese friends kind of thought of their futures back then, I think there was this sense of kind of rapid economic growth and a sense of possibility that that afforded. That is largely gone right now. And I think it is a problem for the regime that they're probably aware of, but they need to think how to address it, given that they've also put all this emphasis on security. And some of the things that they may need to do to restart the economy may not be in accord with their tightening political space.
You have mentioned how frequently U.S.-China relations came up. Help us understand how people talked about the U.S.-China relationship.
Yeah, this was really quite remarkable that almost every conversation I had would at some point have a dimension that would focus on U.S.-China relations. And it's important to recognize the way that we talk about China in the U.S. right now is heard by people within China, including very reformist, open-minded people who are not at all strong supporters of the regime, but at the same time are turned off by the way that we talk about China in a lot of our political discourse here.
Mm. That's fascinating. Do you have an example?
A very dramatic moment for me was when I was speaking to an old friend of mine who is trained in the U.S., has spent many years studying law in the U.S. and has very elite degrees from the U.S. and is constantly in communication with U.S. legal scholars, very much a reformist type within the Chinese system. And he was telling me about how negative all the time rhetoric from the U.S. Was turning him off. And he said to me something along the lines of, "Nason, if you lose people like me, you're really in trouble."
You know, one China scholar you and I both know who, you know, went to China, came back not long ago, Scott Kennedy.
Sure.
His observation was, you know, with fewer people going back and forth, fewer exchanges, positions, say, in U.S.-China relations, they get hardened. They get calcified. You start to think, assume the worst of the other side. Do you agree?
I think those are excellent points. I couldn't agree more. You know, one example I can give you of that is the way that they discuss the balloon incident in China.
Wait, time out. How did the conversation go about the U.S. government overdoing the balloon incident? I mean, the balloon came from China.
Of course. So, you know, their perspective is that the U.S. government maybe played it up more than was justified. But, you know, when you're in person, as I was, and I could hear that point, then it was easy for me to push back and say, look, if you in China were to look up and see a big balloon in the sky from the U.S., it would also be a big political problem.
No kidding.
In China. That's the kind of thing that you can do in person, not over Zoom, not over telephone calls, but when we're actually sitting face to face.
Is this kind of the future, though? That is, fewer American journalists being over there, fewer international business persons, consultants being in China, and conversely, fewer Chinese students and the entrepreneurs from China coming to the U.S. Is that where we're going?
There are people who are more pessimistic than me who think so, who think that is clearly the direction we're going. I tend to be an optimist, and at the very least, I think we are in a moment right now where we can at least try to change that direction. There is strong support in the rhetoric of both governments at this moment to restart exchanges, to restart student exchanges, to restart scholar exchanges, and to get business exchanges going again.
Yeah. Nason Mahbubi is a research scholar at the University of Pennsylvania, and he has just come back from China. Thank you, Nason, for sharing your thoughts, sharing your notebook with us.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.